अर्हमाधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधमाधव कुंज
बिहारी
गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोर नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोर नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन रमन चीरावन चारी रमन चीरावन जय राधमाधव कुंज
बिहारी
जय राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda
Jaya Shri Krishna
Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Prabhu Para, Jaya Prabhu Para, Prabhu Para, Jaya Prabhu Para, Jaya Prabhu Para, Jaya Prabhu Para, Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada,
Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada,
Jaya Vishnupad Paramahansa Pratipraja Acharya Stotra Sita Sri Srimad Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jaya. ISKCON Samstapak Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya. Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Pratipraja Acharya Stotra Sita Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati Goswami Prabhupada Ki Jaya. Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jaya. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jaya. Prem Se Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaur Bhaktavinda Ki Jaya. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gop Gopinath Sham Kundaradha Kundagiri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Dham Ki Jai Jamuna Mai Ki Jai Ganga Mai Ki Jai Tulsi Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Samveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Nitai Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, Gaur Premanande. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 28, Kapila's Instructions on Devotional Service, Text 17. Apichya darshanam, shashvat, sarvaloka, namakritam, santam, vayasi, kaishore, britya, anugraha, kataram, apichya darshanam shashvat, sarvaloka namaskritam, santam vayasi kaishore, brityanu graha kataram, apichya darshanam shashvat, sarvaloka namaskritam, santam vayasi kaishore, brityanu graha kataram, apichya darshanam shashvat, sarvaloka namaskritam, santam vayasi kaishore, brityanu graha kataram.
Apichya darshanam shashvat,
apichya darshanam shashvat,
sarvaloka namaskritam,
sarvaloka namaskritam,
santam vayasi kaishore,
santam vayasi kaishore,
vrityanugraha kataram,
vrityanugraha kataram.
Apichya darshanam shashvat,
apichya darshanam shashvat, sarvaloka namaskritam,
santam vayasi kaishore,
santam vayasi kaishore,
vrityanugraha
kataram,
apichya darshanam shashvat,
apichya darshanam shashvat,
Vrityanugraha kataram,
Vaishnavis. Abhichyadarshanam.
Abhichyadarshanam.
Very beautiful to see.
Very beautiful to see.
Shashvat.
Shashvat.
Eternal.
Eternal.
Sarvaloka.
Sarvaloka.
By the inhabitants of every planet.
By the inhabitants of every planet.
Namakritam.
Namakritam.
Worshipable. Santam,
Santam,
situated.
Situated.
Vayasi,
Vayasi,
in youth.
In
youth. Kaishore,
Kaishore,
in boyhood.
In boyhood.
Britya,
Britya,
upon his devotee.
Upon his devotee.
Anugraha,
Anugraha,
to bestow blessings.
To bestow blessings.
Kataram,
Kataram,
eager.
Eager.
Translation. The Lord is eternally very beautiful, and he is worshipable by all the inhabitants of every planet. He is ever youthful and always eager to bestow his blessing upon his devotees. Please repeat. The Lord is eternally very beautiful.
The Lord is eternally very beautiful.
And he is worshipable.
And he is worshipable.
By all the inhabitants.
By all the inhabitants.
Of every planet.
Of every planet.
He is ever youthful.
He is ever youthful.
And always eager.
And always eager.
To bestow his blessings.
To bestow his blessings.
Upon his devotees.
Upon his devotees.
Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The word Sarva Loka Namaskritam means that he is worshipable by everyone on every planet. There are innumerable planets in the material world, and innumerable planets in the spiritual world as well. On each planet, there are innumerable inhabitants who worship the Lord. For the Lord is worshipable by all but the impersonalists. The Supreme Lord is very beautiful. The word Shashvat is significant. It is not that he appears beautiful to the devotees, but is ultimately impersonal. Shashvat means ever-existing. That beauty is not temporary. It is ever-existing. He is always youthful. In the Brahma Sanghita 533, it is also stated, Advaitam Achutam Anadim Anantarupam Adyam Purana Purusham Navyovanam Cha. The original person is one without a second, yet he never appears old. He always appears as ever fresh. as a blossoming youth. The Lord's facial expression always indicates that he is ready to show favor and benediction to the devotees. For the non-devotees, however, he is silent. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, although he acts equally to everyone, because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and because all living entities are his children, he is especially inclined to serve those engaged in devotional service. The same fact is confirmed here. He is always anxious to show favor to the devotees. Just as the devotees are always eager to render service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord is also very eager to bestow benediction upon the pure devotees. Translation again. The Lord is eternally very beautiful, and he is worshipable by all the inhabitants of every planet. He is ever youthful and always eager to bestow his blessings upon his devotees. So every day we recite the prayer to Srila Prabhupada, Pranam Mantra, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. That he has come to the Western world on the order of his spiritual master to deliver the Western countries from impersonalism and voidism. Because impersonalism and voidism are the opposites of devotional service. In fact, there cannot be devotional service where there's impersonalism and voidism. So here, Srila Prabhupada takes the phrase Sarvaloka Namaskritam, that he is worshipable by everyone on every planet, as true, except for the impersonalists. He's worshipable by everyone on every planet in the material world and in the spiritual world, but not by the impersonalists. So the impersonalists are singled out. And again later in the purport, he mentions that, well, for the devotees he takes special care, but for the non-devotees he is silent. So, when we first heard the phrase Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, we were thinking, well, we don't have Nirvisheshavadis and Shunyavadis in the West. You know, they might be in India, but we don't have them in the West. We just have ordinary people. But impersonalism is very subtle, and even though people in the West may not be officially trained in the ideas of Shankaracharya, for example, they do have impersonal ideas. And now, of course, many impersonal ideas from India have actually come to the West, and people are learning about them more directly. But even otherwise, the impersonal tendency is always there. I think practically in every religious tradition, there are personalists and impersonalists. So Srila Prabhupada's specific mission was to deliver us from impersonalism. Here I think of one person, I'm sure there were many, but I think of one person who was an impersonalist before he met Srila Prabhupada. That is myself. I was looking for spiritual life, and after a while I realized that I needed a guru. But I couldn't find my guru. In fact, I was sort of reminded of my own story a little by His Holiness Bhakti Churuswami's story yesterday. Because I would go anywhere to see a guru if I heard there was a guru. But I always found some defect with them. I could go through the list, but I always found some defect with them. And I thought, you know, this is not my perfect master. And I even had a mental image of what my guru would be like. It was very vague, but he didn't have hair. And almost, well, I would say, yes, all the swamis and yogis from India that I saw, they all had long hair. So I was despairing whether I'll actually ever find my perfect master. And then, at the time, I was a student at Brandeis University outside Boston. And somehow the devotees had arranged a program there. Actually, I had a professor in the Department of Psychology who had been to India. And he even introduced Indian concepts in one of the courses that I took in psychology. And there, for the first time, I came across these terms. He had four columns with different terms of Indian philosophy and Western psychology. And the top line was Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. So, it turns out, I didn't know it at the time, but later I found out it was actually through him that the devotees arranged the program for Srila Prabhupada on campus. And, well, at the time I had a girlfriend, and she was getting sick of me running after all these swamis and yogis all the time. But that particular night that I wanted to go to Prabhupada's lecture, she really made a scene. It was never like that before, but that particular night she really made a scene. I mean, she was, you know, crying and whining and you know, she was saying, like, why can't we be like other people, you know, why do we always have to be going after these swamis and yogis? And, you know, my nature is such I didn't want to disappoint her. And I kept wanting to agree not to go, but something inside of me kept pushing me, you know, you have to go. It was like overwhelming. So finally I said, okay, this will be the last one I ever go to. Little did I know how true that would prove to be. So So we went to the program, and there was Srila Prabhupada, and he was so effulgent that it was actually hard for me to focus on him. There just seemed to be such a light about him. Because of the argument, I ended up being late. So by the time we got there, they were just in the last kirtan. But it was such a powerful kirtan. The walls of the auditorium were bare brick. I mean, it was just a style of architecture. And the amplified sound was reverberating off the walls. And students were getting up from the seating in the auditorium and going on the stage and dancing in a circle. And Srila Prabhupada was there. And I felt like joining them. But, you know, I looked, and it wasn't just my girlfriend. There were a couple of my male friends, and I thought, you know, it was already hard enough to get here. If I go up on the stage and start dancing, they'll really think it's too much. So I stayed in the audience, but I really felt like joining. And then at the end, Satsvarupa Maharaj announced that if anyone was driving to Harvard Square, to Cambridge or to Boston, to please see the devotees in the entrance area of the auditorium because they needed a lift. Because at the time we didn't have a car. The devotees didn't have a car in Boston. Somehow they made some arrangement for Srila Prabhupada, but there was no arrangement for the devotees. So I was actually going to Cambridge, planning to go to Cambridge, and so I went to the foyer. And the first devotee who spoke to me was Bharadraj Prabhu. And he was like so intoxicated by Srila Prabhupada's association and the kirtan. He was like so high. Of course, this is how I was perceiving him at the time. You know, that was the way I saw things. And he just started saying that, you know, when Krishna, you know, showed his universal, I don't know why, he just started saying, when Krishna showed his universal form to Arjuna, it was like more brilliant than millions of suns, and Arjuna's knees were trembling, and he prayed to Krishna, please come back to your original form. And he was just like going on and on. I thought, wow. So I had a station wagon. I had a red Rambler station wagon. And I said, well, you know, I'm going to Harvard Square. You can come with me. So they all piled in. I don't know how many there were, but there were just three of us in the front seat. And then in the second seat, maybe three or four. And then in the back compartment, I don't know how many they fit in there. So I was driving, and my girlfriend and Janava were in the front seat, and I think all the rest were men, or maybe, no, I don't know, there might have been some ladies. And then in the back compartment there was Satsvarupa Das at the time, and my roommate, my best friend, Gary. So I was overhearing them arguing, and my, you know, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi. So my friend was saying that, you know, ultimately everything is void. And Satsvarupa was saying, you know, there is no void in the creation of God. And they were like arguing back and forth. And I was listening to them, and I thought, I have the answer, because I'd been reading so many books, I have the answer. So I said, it's not void, and it's not not void, but to give it a name, we call it the void. Which is, but that didn't. I thought that was the perfect solution, but didn't stop them from arguing. So then I started to talk to Janavan, you know, and she was really powerful. And I knew it wasn't her power. I knew she was getting it from somewhere. So I mentioned about my different pursuits of Zen and so on. And she said that in Zen, like the world is like images on a screen, movie images on a screen, but they actually have no reality. But if you draw your consciousness back from the dancing images on the screen, you'll see there's a beam of light. And if you follow the beam of light back, it comes to a point. And I thought, wow, this is the best explanation of Zen I've ever heard. And I'd even met Zen masters who were certified by Zen masters in Japan. And then she said, but behind that point, there's a projector. And behind the projector, there's a person who's running the projector. And I thought, wow, you know, she perfectly understands Zen, but she goes beyond it, which, you know, no one had ever done before. And then I mentioned Yogananda, because I'd read Autobiography of a Yogi. She said, oh, Yogananda. He's just a shopkeeper. If you go to his ashram in California, he's just a shopkeeper. You know, you want yoga, he has this in stock. You want, you know, whatever you want, he keeps it in stock. And he has a statue of Mahatma Gandhi there, saying that he's like a teacher of world peace or worker for world peace. But he wasn't interested in world peace. He was just trying to drive the British out of India. So I thought, wow. But I knew, again, it couldn't be her. She couldn't speak with such authority on her own. There was something behind her. So I thought, I have to meet the guru. So eventually I got the address of the temple, and I came. And, you know, it was a little hard for me to understand Srila Prabhupada's accent. And probably it wasn't just the accent. It might have been the philosophy itself, because I wasn't used to it. But one thing I caught, and Srila Prabhupada said that out of many thousands of men, one will seek perfection. And I, when I heard that, I thought, that's me. That's me. And then he took questions. So then I asked the question that had been on my mind, you know, for months or years. And I said, there's so many swamis and yogis and masters, and each one recommends a different process of self-realization. And each one says that his is the best. So how do I know which is actually the best? So Srila Prabhupada replied with a question, what is your goal? Do you want to become God or do you want to serve God? And that was a very intelligent question, because my question was, which means is the best? But a more basic question is, means to what end? So then Srila Prabhupada went on to convince me that, well, he said, if you want to become God, that means you're not God now. So how can not God become God? God is always God. Krishna is always God. He's God when he's playing on the lap of Yashoda. He's God when he's on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He's always God. He doesn't have to become God by yoga or meditation. So he said, you can become godly, but you cannot become God. And then he said, God is in your heart. He's ready to help you. Yeah, if you want to serve God, God is in your heart, and he's ready to help you. But if you want to become God, why should God help the competition? So he said, if you sow the seed of service to God and water it with chanting, God will give the sunlight and, you know, all the conditions favorable to make it grow. But if you want to become God, you're only cheating yourself. So at that time, I had the feeling that Prabhupada knew everything about me. And I actually felt he was seeing straight through me, straight through the walls of the temple, all the way from Alston, where the temple was, all the way back to Waltham, to my apartment. And he was seeing in my apartment. He was seeing into my bathroom. And onto the wall of my bathroom, where I had put up this paper, and I'd written in my own handwriting very ornate letters and different colors, "You are God." Just in case I forgot to remind myself. So I knew he is my perfect master. He knows everything about me. And, you know, he has perfect knowledge and he's my perfect master. So he said, so what do you think? You want to become God or you want to serve God? So I knew by then, I should say, I wanted to serve God. And I did. He brought me to the point. And I said, I wanted to say I want to serve God, but I knew I couldn't cheat him. I mean, he already saw straight through me. So I said, I want to serve God, but actually I realized I wanted to become God. I said, yes. So then I surrendered. I mean, within my heart, I surrendered. I offered obeisances, and I felt completely humiliated because I felt I'd been exposed in front of all of these people, all of the devotees and all of the others in the audience. I'd been exposed for wanting to become God, which seemed very abominable. It seemed abominable. So I kept my head down on the floor for a long time, partly out of submission to Srila Prabhupada and partly out of fear, because I just imagined if I got up and looked around, there'd be all these people glaring at me. Ooh, you wanted to become God. You wanted to become Krishna. So I kept my head down for a long time. But then there was a feast that night. There may have been initiations. I know later there was the three marriages. Anyway, so I could hear the sounds that indicated that there was distribution of prasad. And eventually I looked up and everyone was smiling and blissful. They weren't like glaring at me and making bad faces, and that was the first meeting. So I would come every night, and after, Prabhupada mentioned the devotees, to the devotees, that I guess after a few nights he mentioned that I was very submissive. And well, he said, well, I shouldn't say, but anyway, just he said, you know, he's very submissive and he'll be a great help to this Krishna consciousness movement. So I thought, submissive, that wasn't like in my list of virtues. We were never taught in school that it's a virtue to be submissive. It's quite the contrary. Like, you know, you have to think for yourself. Don't accept anything blindly, you know, analyze whatever, you know, critical thinking and submissive. I thought that was very strange, but I knew he thought it was a good quality in me, so that made me think, well, okay. So after a few days, because I had a car and they didn't have a car. I think they probably had to rent taxis. I don't know how Prabhupada got around, but they asked me if I would like to drive Srila Prabhupada to the programs. So I said yes, I would. And the schedule was that Monday, Wednesday, and Friday he would speak in the temple. And Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, he would have an outside engagement, mainly at universities. And then on Sunday was the Sunday program at the temple. So I came to pick him up, and I was early. And I came to the temple, and the temple was pretty much empty. But they said that Srila Prabhupada was staying in an apartment across the street, and I could go there until it was time to leave for the program. So I went, and there was Srila Prabhupada with a group of disciples. And so I came in, and he had his little deities, little Radha Krishna deities. So I guess I sat in front of them with my back to them. So the devotee said, no, no, you can't sit there. So I moved. And he was having very loving exchanges with all the devotees, and then he told them to go and get ready for the program. And I was left alone in the room with him. And I felt, I mean, I had so many questions, but I felt that it's sort of hard to explain, but I felt like every molecule of his body was like speaking and answering all my questions. And it was like such a, I don't know, it was just such a deep experience to be alone in the room with him. And, you know, he had this beautiful sort of golden dark complexion, and I don't know, there was a spiritual atmosphere that pervaded the whole room. And he was putting on fresh tilak. And, you know, he put the water into the palm of his hand, and then he was rubbing the tilak, dissolving some of the tilak, and then he, you know, applied it very carefully on his face. And then at the end, there's nothing left on his hand. I thought, you know, he's really perfect. You know, like he judged exactly how much water and tilak to put on his hand. This is sort of an aside, but years later, many years later in India, after Srila Prabhupada had left, I was invited to the marriage of our auditor in Bombay. And our auditor in Bombay was the chairman of the worldwide Satya Sai Baba Trust. And so the marriage was performed at Satya Sai Baba's ashram in Andheri, Bombay, in his presence. So so after the ceremony, his admirers were introducing people to him. And he would, he had these, you know, his famous long sleeves. And he would go like this. And they'd hold out their eager hands, and then the ashes would fall down. And then, you know, he would, like, motion for one of his other admirers or servants, handkerchief, handkerchief. So then they'd bring a handkerchief and wipe off the ashes. So I thought, you know, if he has the power to make ashes appear out of nowhere, why can't he make them disappear from the palm of his hand? Why does he need, you know, somebody to come running with a handkerchief? But anyway, Srila Prabhupada made the tilak disappear. His hand was completely clean. And, you know, and then he said, where are you from? And, you know, I answered. He asked very simple questions to put me at ease. But I had imagined we were going to have, like, some very high philosophical, esoteric discussion. He was just asking these very simple questions. And that was also good, because afterwards I thought, well, maybe I'm not as you know, elevated as I thought I was. You know, maybe I'm not really ready to have this high esoteric spiritual discussion. So then we were going to the car. I was escorting him to the car. And this question, it was just like burning inside of me. I had to ask him. And I said, what is it like to be with Krishna? Because I'd heard from all the devotees that Srila Prabhupada is always with Krishna. And he said, I thought he said, that's, you know, inconceivable. And that was a perfect answer. And I knew I couldn't understand more than that. Although later, our godbrother Hansaduta Prabhu, who was there, he thought Prabhupada said that's confidential. But anyway, I heard it inconceivable. So he went to the program. It was at the Harvard Divinity School. And, you know, Harvard is sort of like reputed to be the best university in the United States. And the students were really, they thought they were very smart. And after the lecture, they were like sort of shooting these questions at Srila Prabhupada. So one said, you know, you keep talking about chanting, but, you know, what is chanting going to do for the people of the world? You know, we have to help the people of the world. And then he started quoting the Russian Revolution. So Srila Prabhupada said, are the people of Russia happy? Said, no. And Srila Prabhupada said, then what is the use? And even if it gets better for a while, it'll get worse again. And then one young man said, you know, you're repeating Hare Krishna, just repeating. But couldn't you just repeat anything and get the same result? You know, couldn't you do chanting like 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and get the same result? And Prabhupada said, of course that is not possible. But after you get tired of counting, you can try chanting. So everyone laughed, and he was just like, you know, they thought they were smart and fast, and he was much quicker and much smarter than they were. And like in the end, they were just totally in awe. I would say they were in awe. So after the program, I was just like, I was intoxicated, and I was just like wandering among the students listening to what they were talking about. And I guess some of the other devotees may have been, I don't know, I lost track. I was like, And then suddenly Jadurani comes running to me and sort of imitating Srila Prabhupada's voice affectionately. So, where is the driver? Oh my gosh, I have to drive Srila Prabhupada back to the temple. So I ran out to the car. Srila Prabhupada and the devotees were waiting. I let them all in. And I didn't really know the area that well. But I made it to the program because it was light then. But on the way back, it was dark. I wasn't quite sure, but I didn't want to admit that I didn't know the way, and I sort of tried to find the way. But after a while, I realized we were getting more and more lost. So finally, I had to sort of come out with it that I think we're lost. And Srila Prabhupada said, oh, is not the driver supposed to know the way? So I didn't know I was the driver. I didn't know there were drivers. I was just, you know, offering my car to take Srila Prabhupada to the program. Anyway, the group sort of, because we were going down all these streets and nobody really knew where we were by then, but we sort of figured it out and we got back. So when we got back, you know, to the temple in Prabhupada's apartment, when Srila Prabhupada got out of the car, I like rushed out and came around and I said, you know, I'm sorry that we got lost. You know, that I got us lost. And Srila Prabhupada replied, that's all right. But very kindly, you know, his voice was so full of love and kindness and compassion, and I thought, he's so nice. You know, he's not only does he know everything, but he's very kind and merciful. So, like that, every night I would come, and then the time came for Srila Prabhupada to leave. And I didn't realize the significance of it. I mean, I almost assumed he would always be there. But the devotees were going to the airport, and I also accompanied them. And at the airport, I guess after Prabhupada boarded the flight, I saw all the devotees are crying. And I thought, you know, what's happening? You know, I didn't understand it. Because Prabhupada very often would quote Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. So I thought, you know, why are they crying? So I asked Arundhati. She used to answer a lot of my questions. So I asked Arundhati, you know, why is everyone crying? You know, what's happening? I thought, up until then, I thought everything about Krishna consciousness was perfect. I thought maybe this is the one thing that's not perfect, that the spiritual master has to leave. So she replied that Srila Prabhupada had said that on the absolute platform, meeting and separation are both the same. They're both occasions for transcendental ecstasy. So I thought, wow, that's a perfect answer. But still, I wasn't sure if it was practical. In theory, it sounded perfect, but I wasn't sure if it was practical. So after Prabhupada left, there was some momentum from his visit, but at the same time, I sensed, I don't know if it was true of the other devotees, because they all seemed very, you know, Krishna conscious, but I felt that the momentum may be slowing down a bit after Prabhupada's departure. So I was wondering, is this really true? So then one day we were doing Harinam Sankirtan in front of one of the subways, It's just a, and I don't know what happened, but suddenly I felt Srila Prabhupada's presence. I felt that he was right there with us. And then I thought, yes, it is true what they said, that on the absolute platform there's no difference between meeting and separation. And then I felt, yes, everything about Krishna consciousness is perfect. And then the rest is history, as they say. But that was my first encounter with Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Are there any questions or comments? Surya Prabhu. What happened to my girlfriend? Okay, I'll tell you if you really want to know. So, you know, as I mentioned, I was a psychology major at Brandeis University, and sometimes I go to Cambridge to attend lectures at Harvard. And so there was some, you know, renowned psychologist or psychiatrist who had come to Harvard. And this was after I met Prabhupada. I came every day for about 2 weeks, and then I just moved in. So anyway, we had gone to this lecture. I don't even remember who the psychologist was or psychiatrist was. But my girlfriend phoned him. Somehow she got his phone number, and she telephoned him to complain about me. To say, like, you know, well, even before then I'd become vegetarian and almost celibate. I knew that was... And so she phoned him and told him what was happening with me. So, you know, he told her, you know, this is not your problem. This is his problem. You know, there's nothing wrong with you. He's the one that has the problem. And she left. She left me. She's also... Talk about the Lord always being... It's very interesting, because that word is in the verse, anugraha, mercy. And the same word appears in the verse, yasyaham anugranami, where Lord Krishna says that when I want to bestow special mercy on a devotee, I take away his opulences. So I never thought of, made the connection at the time, but he took her away, which was definitely his mercy. And Gary, that was a big disappointment, because my friends, there were a few of us, Gary and Paul, those were the two main, and there were others. I thought we were all seekers, you know. So after I met Srila Prabhupada, I went back and I told him, this is it, I found it. This is what we've all been looking for. And I thought they'd all just immediately become devotees. And, you know, I brought them to the Sunday program, and I thought they'd love it. I mean, I couldn't believe the prasad. When I said I thought everything about Krishna consciousness was perfect, it included the prasad. I mean, it's like that first feast, I mean, every bite of every preparation just exploded with, you know, delicious transcendental flavors that I'd never experienced. It was like... It was not material. There's no comparison. So I thought, you know, I said, this is it. You know, this is what we've all been looking for, you know. And, they didn't like the feast. There's too much sugar. And it was like, they had a totally different perception of it. And not one of them, well, there was one girl. She sort of became a devotee. You know, she came and moved into the temple. She was very submissive, actually. And I think she admired me. So she moved into the temple. She would wear a sari and she would do devotional service. But this was all like, you know, the May, and, you know, graduation was in June. And we were all in our senior year. And so it was like she was living in the temple. She seemed to be happy. She was wearing a sari and doing service. But it was like, when it was time for graduation and her parents came, it was like she went back to her Western dress and went back home and never heard anything about her. And Gary and Paul, I don't know. But I did have another friend. He was a graduate student. Yeah, we were actually very close. I had a lot of older friends. So he, of all the people, he became a Buddhist, but he visited me at the Juhu Temple. He came to Ceylon, to Sri Lanka, on a sort of Buddhist pilgrimage, but he also visited me in Juhu. And, you know, he came on programs, he chanted, he took prasad. He was probably the closest. And then there was another one, Ronnie. He also, you know, we were pretty good friends. He was also a year or two older than me. I don't know how he got my phone number and phoned me once when I was visiting America. No, he phoned, I wasn't there, but my parents kept his name and number, so when I visited, I phoned him. And he was very interested, but it was sort of like, he was willing to learn from me, but he wanted me to be able to learn from him too. He didn't want it to be one-sided. And I didn't really feel I had anything to learn from him. You know, I sort of pretended, I went along with it a little, but within my heart I felt, you know, I really have nothing to learn from you. And coming back to the program at Harvard Divinity School, I didn't remember this part, but later Ravindra Swarup Prabhu told me that he met one of the professors of the Divinity School who had attended Prabhupada's lecture, and apparently he had asked Prabhupada, you know, that you've come to teach us so much from your tradition. Do you think there's anything that you can learn from us here? And Prabhupada said, no. I think the professor was a little annoyed by Prabhupada's answer. But that's... But sometimes I think of them, not often, but I prayed to Prabhupada to be merciful to these old friends, so I'm sure they must have gotten some benefit. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Itai gaur premanande. Oh, thank you. Thank you.